So I'll be talking about the work that we've done in collaboration with Carlos Dimopoulos, Shamit Kachro, Albion Oil, and Eva Silverstein. We just posted a short paper in the archive, and we are hoping to post another longer paper with more detail as soon as possible. Let me first start with giving you a motivation for this work. We know that in our quest for the unified theory of nature, we are facing a very serious challenge in trying to explain the origin of small numbers in nature. Perhaps the best known of these is the so-called hierarchy problem, which is an attempt to understand the apparent numerical discrepancy between the electroweak scale and the Planck scale. Electroweak scale where the electroweak interactions become strong, and the Planck scale where the gravitational interactions become strong. This ratio is of order of all 10 to the minus 16. And in fact, this small number presents two kinds of challenges to a theoretical description. Thank you. First, you can ask the question as to what is the actual origin of this number, where does it come from? And second, why is it radiatively stable? Why isn't it corrected to some completely different value of further unity, let's say, when you start thinking about quantum corrections which could be emerging from gravitationally coupled objects in the loops, if you imagine that the cutoff scale is n Planck. Now, so far the most attractive idea has been, and still is, the presence of supersymmetry with a low supersymmetry breaking scale that could at least consistently explain the stability and the technical naturalness of this number. There is still, however, the issue of what is the origin of low supersymmetry breaking scale. And there are various mechanisms that have been designed that can address this question. Particularly, they postulate the existence of a hidden sector of the theory with some additional degrees of freedom engaged dynamics that is very weakly directly coupled to us, and where supersymmetry is broken at some high scale, which is then by some mediation mechanism transmitted to the visible sector, and in the process of this transmission it is reduced down to nearly TV scale, which is necessary in order to explain the stability of the standard model. However, within this quest, within this problem, there are still many questions that are left open, in particular the structure of the hidden sector, the presence of many new parameters and particles which need to be understood and explained, so on and so forth. And let's say, as the ultimate question in this setup, the explanation of the smallness and stability of the cosmological constant, that I actually have nothing to say about in this talk. I'll try to say a little bit more about some of the other problems. And now, in recent years, we've seen actually the emergence of new ideas that may be useful in trying to address some of these questions and look at them from a completely different perspective. In particular, these ideas are being stimulated and motivated by string theory, which is at this point the only consistent framework for quantizing gravity, and it introduces many new and striking concepts that are original to it, particularly those that are of specific interest for the topic of this talk, are the presence of brains that can localize gauge dynamics to subspaces, and the extra dimensions in which the brains live, but through which gravity can be diluted, and therefore weakened relative to the gauge theories that live on the brain. Now, probably the simplest framework is the Ozawa-Witten model, which basically postulates the existence of end-of-the-world brains that localize gauge dynamics, separated by some extra-dimensional bulk, which can be explored by gravity. And here, one can actually do consistent and interesting model building to see how the unification scale can be reduced down to about m gut. There are also other ideas that are more phenomenologically motivated. Let me just very briefly review them. Those that have become particularly popular over the last couple of years are the so-called Arkani-Hamid-Dimopoulos duality framework, who basically imagine the existence of a very large extra space inside of which there live some solitary, lonely brains that curve that extra space very, very weakly so that the bulk is basically nearly flat. And then the way they use this for addressing the hierarchy problem is to postulate that while the gauge dynamic is localized to the brains, gravity is not, and then basically get diluted throughout this huge extra space, which is huge relative to the fundamental scale. And as a result of this, by volume dilution, effectively, the effective four-dimensional Planck scale that we will observe gets increased relative to the postulated fundamental scale of the theory. There is also the other framework that has been investigated due to Randall and Sundin, which posits the existence of lonely brains in strongly curved extra space. The curvature is, let's say, supported by something like a negative cosmological constant in the bulk, so that locally the space in the bulk would be that of Anti de Sitter 5 geometry. And then this space is ended on some end of the world brain, where one postulates the existence of extra gauge dynamics that's only confined to it. And then there are two effects which emerge. First, effectively, in this geometry, one obtains a so-called localized four-dimensional graviton. The reason is basically the fact that ADS geometry has a very specific geometric structure such that most of the volume of that extra space lives near the brain itself, and so basically the objects that are naturally placed in the bulk tend to be around here because that's where most available space is. As a result of this, then they can basically come up with a finite 10 to the 19 Jeff four-dimensional Planck scale that has similar functional formula like in ADD, except with the size of extra dimensions is replaced by an effective scale that controls the variation of gravity through the bulk. And then if they want to address the hierarchy problem, they posit the existence of an additional brain that lives deep in the throat of the ADS space, which has negative tension and supports, let's say, the standard model itself, where the effective gauge, the electroweak scale, emerges from the ADS scaling down of the fundamental scale in the bulk. It's not, however, completely clear how to realize these models in string theory. There has been a fair bit of debate on that. But let us, therefore, leave that issue for a moment aside and, in fact, consider this new setup that we have been discussing, which is basically an attempt to explore a new calculable regime of string theory, where we have compactifications on spaces such as, let's say, F theory, a la Hemming-Verlinde, where in this compact space there are separated stacks of many brains. Because there is many brains, they tend to curve the space in their neighborhood, essentially by raising gravitational barriers around them that produce these throats as the bulk space is being deformed as one tries to approach the location of the brains themselves. Now, one thing that is immediately clear for this kind of picture is that in these kinds of models, effectively the issue of generating a four-dimensional Planck scale may be somewhat separated from the issue of the geometry of the throats themselves, because there is going to be a large contribution to the effective four-dimensional Planck scale coming from the very bulk of this Calabi-Yau space here that can be relatively large compared to the contributions of the separated throats. However, in order to get a hierarchically larger four-dimensional Planck scale, one only needs essentially relatively small sizes of the Calabi-Yau here in particular. Okay? And in the examples that we have explored, the linear size of the Calabi-Yau does not need to be much bigger than, let's say, any order of magnitude than the ADS radius in the throats. That is, of course, going to be kept roughly at the unification scale. So the setup that we want to explore, therefore, is a geometrically small space, small in the units of the unification scale, that is only an order of magnitude, let's say, bigger, but where the hierarchy comes from a different mechanism. In particular, the hierarchies and the small numbers that we want to generate here are going to be coming from the fact that some strong dynamics in some throat away from the one, let's say, where we live, essentially gets its scale effectively lowered because of the fact that the modes that need to get to us to transmit this strong dynamics have to work against the gravitational field. In the effective gravity description above, that corresponds to the tunneling mechanism that we will actually explore in detail. So what is the toy model that you can set up in order to study this?
For simplicity and calculability, you can actually imagine a very simple five-dimensional gravity model where the presence of that large collabial volume is modeled by inputting some ultraviolet brain in the geometry where you're simply cutting the space off and modeling all of the collabial's presence in this way. And then you can imagine basically a two-sided geometry with two different throats and some IR brain sitting on the end of each of these throats. In simple supergravity constructions, these would be negative tension objects, but we don't worry about that because we imagine that they're going to be resolved in some consistent way by some string theory construction. Now, the important thing that needs to be put in here is to imagine that these really correspond to some stacks of brains which curve the space significantly, and therefore give rise to some warped geometry. For the very presence of the mechanism, it is not important that this is ADS warping. Okay? In fact, any kind of power law warping will do well in terms of producing effective potential barriers between the brains in the UV region to which the modes that want to live here have to tunnel in order to get to the other side. Particular, if you look at the effective potential which arises for any small fluctuations for minimally coupled modes in some power of warping, you will find that this effective potential is essentially a linear combination of terms with the second derivatives of the warp factor and express the first derivatives, and therefore will go as 1 over z squared, where z is the conformal distance between the bands. This, of course, is the qualitatively same potential as the one that appears in the ADS warpings, and so, in fact, much of the analysis we believe will carry over for those cases as well. The other thing is that we do not necessarily need to take these distances to be TEV-ish. What we will take is that the separation between IR and UV brains is roughly God scale, or close to the God scale. So it's really about 10 to the 14, 10 to the 13, 10 to the 15 GeV or so. What that means is that in terms of the proper distances between the brains, remember, if you imagine that this is, that the warping is actually ADS, then these separations between IR and UV brains are related to the proper separations by exponentiation. They're really something like ADS radius and e to the r over l. That means that the proper distances r between the brains do not have to be like 15 or 30 times r, but can be small, order few. Okay? However, for calculational simplicity, we have taken, in fact, the warping to be ADS for and also for additional reason, if you wanted to keep contact with ADS CFT and ask questions about what is the actual ADS CFT connection between this setup, so that we can, in fact, test some of the results by using some intuition about the holographic dual.
So understand. So if we only look at one side of this,
yes,
you're saying that the energy scale on the infrared brain relative to ultraviolet is not that much smaller.
No, that's exactly right. So it's not TeV. The cutoff here would be about 10 to the 14 Z, let's say, and not TeV.
So by itself, it wouldn't do much.
By itself, it wouldn't do much. In particular, it's not ADS scalings that are going to be generating small numbers. Small numbers will be coming from something else. And let's actually explore what is that other mechanism which will generate it. So let's just now ask a very simple question about what might be expected to emerge as an effect for the description of this setup. Now, if we keep the throats to the ADS, because you see first that because they're separated by some finite distance, the states that live in different throats will mix with each other. Okay, because they're nearby, so the states can go from one side to the other. However, of course, unless this is prohibited by some superselection rules. Okay. However, the other thing is that in the regime of large N and large stress coupling, the mixing can be described by gravity description, okay, which corresponds to some VP coupled regime. And so we can, in fact, look for the solutions of the bulk equations of motion and treat them consistently without knowing that the perturbation theory description is valid. From that point of view, the dynamics which corresponds to the mixing of the modes really corresponds to looking at the small fluctuations of bulk modes and recognizing that the problem corresponds to quantum mechanical tunneling through that barrier around the UV brain. Now, the other thing that should be noted is the description is essentially valid for the energy scales that are below the ADS scale, because we are ignoring those degrees of freedom that can either live in the volume of the collabial space or on these spheres that the throats need to be tensored in order to be brought up to the extra dimension.
So this is tunneling in the supergravity.
Exactly right. It's tunneling in the supergravity description.
And that's even though we're accustomed to mostly treating the supergravity theory semi-classically,
right.
This is a valid thing to think about because it's the leading effect that...
Absolutely, exactly right. I mean, basically, you could say that the description is still semi-classical. The term tunneling comes from the fact that the proper dynamics of these modes is consistently described by something like Schrödinger equations. So in order to actually compute the mixings, you need to compute the overlaps of the wave functions of the objects that live in the bulk. And the simplest way to compute overlaps is to recognize that it really mathematically corresponds to tunneling.
Yeah, but you know, it's an e to the minus 1 n effect.
Right, exactly.
Right. And we're typically ignoring 1 over n corrections, but...
Right, right.
I didn't quite understand the case. It comes out of the classical equation of motion. There's an analogy with the Schrödinger equation. So the classical equation of motion that King was satisfied.
It's a classical...
That's why I asked the question. It's not tunneling in the supergravity. Quantum mechanics.
It's tunneling for quanta of the supergravity fields, but if you just think about the wave functions, the... small factor.
Well, I know how you
solve. Then there is Einstein's equation
right.
In this back.
Yeah, I know.
You solve the classical equations. Right?
Yeah, I know how to compute the bound solution.
It's not really quantum gravity.
Right, it's not really quantum gravity.
It's just an analogous one-dimensional quantum mechanics.
Exactly.
That's right.
But that's always happens when you have waves.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
It's just...
Right. You could say that if you just look at the equation, you might want to say, you know, is this mode that lives on one side always going to be living there? And if you just looked at at the classical equations of motion and the leading order,
you
might
use
the
WK, you're tunneling amplitude.
It's by the computation, right?
Well, I claim it's 1 over n. But to compute the WKB tunneling amplitude, you do indeed solve a classical equation.
Right.
Okay, that doesn't mean that it's classical physics.
Well,
it is classical.
You
know,
it's
just a difference between a field theory and a point particle theory.
Right.
So this is the classical equation for the gravitational field, which is equivalent to a sort of a particle graviton tunneling through.
Right. It's a quantum field tunnel and.
If you wish, you could say that the term tunneling comes from the appropriate tool to analyze, from using a specific tool to analyze the problem. It's not, you know, fundamental quantum mechanical problem.
It's also true they're getting a very tiny effect, but it's presumably the leading order effect,
precisely
for what they're looking for, like supersymmetry.
Right.
That's exactly. Now, and let me actually just, you know, confirm that even further by actually showing you that explicit equation which emerges if you study the small fluctuations in the bulk. So what happens is indeed you get this potential when you sum up all those derivatives of the work factor, which actually allows you to use the representation that the bulk wave functions obey some effective Schrödinger equation between the in this region of throats between the IR and UV brains. And then, of course, you have to also implement the proper boundary conditions. The n squared here is just affecting the 4D colossal fine mass, because this is just what the 4D momentum sums up to. It's its dispersion relation. Particularly, for example, for gravitons, the way you get this equation is you start out with your classical solution, then you look at the small fluctuation of transverse, traceless spin two modes. And if you use this field definition, you find out that the wave function psi as a function of a bulk variable obeys precisely the Schrödinger equation with a parameter mu squared equals to 15 fourths. Okay? For other modes, for example, if you take a bulk scalar with, let's say, bulk mass m, then you will find that, that the mu squared will also contain a term plus m squared ADS radius squared. Okay? Now, what would be a naive guess of the effective 4D theory description of this setup with two bulks that are connected, of two throats that are connected by a UV brain? Given there has been some discussion in the literature about the holographic interpretation of the Randall-Sundry models, and using what people have thought, you might actually make a naive argument that would extend these holographic discussions to this setup, and then basically argue the following. If you imagine using both the IR and UV brains, then and retain the throats to be describable by ADS geometry, then you may say that each throat geometry really corresponds to some separate conformal field theory. In the presence of the UV brain, we know there is also going to be a 4D graviton mode, and also there will be the mixing between the different sides of the theory, because now they can, there will be states that can go from one throat to the other. It will only take in perhaps large but finite action, so therefore there will be non-zero probability. So how would one want then to write down a Lagrangian that would describe such a setup? Well, one would have the zero mode and the two separated CFTs, and then some mixing terms. And a naive guess would be to take a dimension 8 operator which corresponds to cross term between the two stress energy tensors describing two different CFTs, and then suppress it by some powers of the Planck, four-dimensional Planck mass to the proper power, which is now here 4, in order to get it to get dimensions right. Yes?
So why do you think that operator should be suppressed by the inverse four-dimensional Planck mass?
Sure, you might.
There are other scales that arise, and for example, well, yeah, we've found in various examples.
I completely agree. In fact,
scales below that.
In fact, that's completely right, and that will indeed be the right scale. The right scale that will appear here will be actually ADS radius rather than M4. That's M4, right. You might be motivated to. It depends on how simple you imagine the underlying geometry of this to be, or complicated. Okay, you might imagine that this may be the case if you take just a classical bulk solution. Put in an extra parameter, which is like a free gauge parameter, with which you can effectively remove the UV brain. You can effectively scale things out in such a way that UV brain is sent off to ADS boundary. In that case, you remove the 4D zero mode. That just means you take M4 to go to infinity. So 4D graviton would be coupled. This term would disappear. And also in that limit, you would expect that there wouldn't be any more mixings between the different sides. And then that limit would, of course, remove this. However, that's too simple. Okay, that's obviously too simple. So, in fact, if you take a more complicated geometry such as this Calabi-Yau with throats in there, you can imagine a limit where you can take the bulk of Calabi-Yau to go to infinity while keeping the throats nearby, in which case the cross terms would not vanish. And, in fact, when we look at the explicit calculation, that intuition is borne out by the analysis. So this would be very, very simplistic. I would say that basically, if you imagine that UV brain is not resolved in some consistent way, you may be fooled into thinking that this is the answer.
Yeah. Well, in fact, there are also arguments which we've looked at that the conformal field theory is an effective theory that, in effect, it breaks down at the cutoff scale set by the ADS radius.
Right, exactly. And that, of course, is going to be confirmed by specific analysis.
This is referring to more naive arguments.
Right, this is very naive.
There are people who said Randall Center is nothing but CFT coupled to 4D gravity.
Right.
That's it.
And okay.
He's about to
fall. Well, I'm actually going to show you how, why this fails.
There are less naive arguments in the literature.
I agree with
true,
you.
True, correct. True. So now, if you make this guess, if you just write down this term, actually this gives you a prediction that you can test with an explicit calculation. In particular, this will lead to some sort of a decay amplitude for the states living on one side into the states that live on the other. And then, of course, that's going to be mediated by this term. The amplitude has to be square of this, therefore you get 8 powers of the Planck mass in the denominator. And then the rest has to be made up by the phase factor, which has to give 9 powers of the mass of the state that you start with. Now, the reason this gives you a possibility to test this guess is that you can now go back to the bulk gravity description and explicitly do the tunneling calculation by taking an initial wave packet that moves from one side, which is in, it's moving towards the barrier, and then it tunnels through using the Schrödinger equation description and gets out. And of course, actually, the analysis is nice because this is nothing else but just the old gamma of calculation of the nuclear alpha decay. What you need to do is put in the right boundary conditions. So the boundary conditions you want is basically purely outgoing wave. If you want to keep the discrete spectrum, you may actually change this a little bit by putting in an IR brain to the right very, very far away down the throat. That really won't change the setup very much. Now, you need to have one thing before you compute the probability for tunneling, which is the initial flux. From the point of view, these bulk particles are actually, from the point of view of the bulk, they're described by some effectively Klein-Gordon equation far from the UV region. Therefore, they correspond to relativistic particles. And therefore, the flux is nothing else but just the inverse time that it takes them to go from the IR brain to the region where the potential is significant, which is roughly speaking given by the inverse conformal distance between the brains. When you look, however, at the spectrum and impose properly the quantizations, you find out that the masses, the mass gap for the left localized states is precisely that same distance, 1 over L, the conformal distance between the UV and the left IR brains. And therefore, the flux there is really proportional to effectively 4D KK mass of the state that you start with.
Question?
Yes.
So I should have asked this earlier, but so I wanted to understand exactly what kind of bulk geometry that you are evaluating this, solving this wave equation. So asymptotically, so this is the geometry which have two asymptotic regions, mm-hmm. which are for each of which are like KDS, mm-hmm. and then there is a UV region,
right.
And UV region actually can be quite small, namely of the size of the unification,
right.
And so the curvature there can be quite large.
Okay.
And so is that the situation that you are solving the wave equation?
We are solving the wave equation in that setup. The curvature is everywhere reasonably large, but not excessive. The curvatures are essentially set by the ADS radius. That's nearly that scale. But that's still smaller than the five-dimensional Planck scale.
That is smaller everywhere,
yes.
Including
that's right, radius. Consistently smaller, right.
Oh, I see. And there's a kink. In this picture, there is a kink. At the place where there is a UV brain. It's also supposed to be actually, in practice, when you do the computation, is this modified by something else?
Let's see. You can imagine that the kink is smoothed out, obviously. In some, you know, underlying high-dimensional geometry, the kink won't be there. It'll be smoothed out. But I think that you can actually set up this classical toy model description such that how should I put it? The magnitude of the jump on the kink is also sub-Planckian. Sub-Planckian. So it's not inconsistent. It will not violate the validity of the classical equations of motion that you're solving to set up the background.
The answer itself depends on how you smoothen out this kink.
Well, by smoothing, no, even without smoothing. What I'm saying is even, well, okay, there is this delta function that you need to put in there in the classical gravity description.
Okay.
But if you look at the delta function, you may just interpret it as a boundary condition in the UV. Now, perhaps the proper scale to think about there is essentially the amplitude of the jump. In other words, the size of the first the scale of the first derivative. And that's set by what you think is the tension on that UV toy model brain that you're putting in there. And if you want to get the Poincaré invariant slicings in the effective 4D theory language, that's set by the ADS radius. The ADS radius is sub-Planckian, therefore the jump itself is sub-Planckian as well.
But it's true that the answer depends on which boundary conditions you choose.
Absolutely correct. The answer truly does depend.
So there right. can be a possibility to introduce additional scale depending on the choice of the
number. Yes, certainly.
Additional scale would be the size of the
right.
body out.
Right.
You can actually imagine thickening up this UV brain by some distance, which is also going to, well, for consistency, would presumably have to be, you know, bigger than the 5D Planck
one. So in this particular computation where you evaluate the flux, mm-hmm. what kind of assumption have you made regarding this?
Well, the assumptions that are made is that if you look at low-lying states, that this distance here is not excessively large, but is larger than the ADS.
Specifically about the UV brain.
Okay.
So the boundary condition of the UV brain, what kind of
assumption? Excuse me. So here, that now depends on which mode you want to consider the tunneling for. The explicit tunneling rate that I will show you is done for the zero mode, not for the zero mode, but for the spin 2 traceless transverse massive modes, okay, that are light. The boundary conditions on this UV brain is then forced on us by the general covariance. Essentially what we do is we write down an effective 5D description with a UV brain there with something like a tension term, and then we vary that equation of motion. The equation of motion that will give us something like a delta function source for the wave function, and then we can just do the Gaussian toolbox integration and read off the proper boundary condition from there. In particular,
boundary condition, you can deduce the boundary condition.
From a general covariance, so yeah.
So given the tension of the brain.
Exactly, given the tension of the brain.
Okay, so you're defining the Israel junction formula or something?
Yes, exactly right.
Okay.
That's exactly right. Okay. It's really amounting to using the Israel junction condition. For with the assumption that the UV brain is static, it's not moving.
So that's what my question is. Okay, okay. So the answer is that you use the Israel junction formula.
That's right.
To impose boundary.
That's right. Now, with the flux available, we can now, you know, do the hard work and exactly solve the Schrodinger equation in terms of the proper modes, and get, of course, the Bessel functions, J2N2, the boundary conditions, if we're implementing them correctly, we'll then fix the coefficients, the ratios, and so on and so forth. But in fact, one only gets the idea of what's going on by just doing the WKB approximation, which works quite nicely. So the point is the following. If you look at the classical, if you now think literally in terms of tunneling for this classical process, you can, in fact, get the probability by looking at the classical bounce action. So there is going to be a turning point where the wave hits the barrier, and then you just evaluate the Euclidean action between these two points, and then the probability is going to be that Euclidean action exponentiated. And the answer that you get is basically proportional to the mass of the state times the ADS radius, which is a small number, mind you, because mass is a low line state, which is inversely proportional to the distance between the IR and the UV brains, which is larger than the ADS radius by a few orders of magnitude. And this parameter mu here is positive. Okay? And the approximation is actually pretty good because you find that the condition for the validity is 1 over nu. So for larger nu, the approximation works better. And now for gravitons, you can substitute the value of nu, which is square root of 15 over 2, and you get this kind of formula that the decay rate is n times radius, radius to the power of square root of 15. This looks pretty messy, but already here it certainly doesn't resemble the power n to the 9, which a naive guess made. However, precise calculation actually shows that the Bessel functions that this square root of 15 gets dressed up into 4, which is what it really is. The WKB just went a little bit off mark, but not by much. And in fact, the decay rate is really, using the bulk description, proportional to the 5 powers of the mass of the particle, and of course 4 powers of the ADS scale. So it's suppressed, and so we see two things immediately. Okay, first, we see that in fact, as Steve was pointing out, that since there are other scales, the UV suppression is not going to be M4. In fact, it's inverse ADS radius, okay, to 4 powers, and also we see that the process is. Much faster because it goes as 5 powers of the mass rather than 9. Okay. Now what that means in terms of the 4D description is that the coupling should be via some dimension 6 operator, not a dimension 8 operator.
Could it be with a dimension 8 operator but at a different scale? There are other natural scales that come out in these games.
In this particular model, there aren't other scales, right?
Right.
Well, there are combinations, well, there may well be other relative scales. When you have a TEV brain or whatever, an IR brain, and the ADS radius, and you have things like there's a natural, there's the invariant redshift, and you can have various powers of that times either the ADS radius or the fundamental Planck scale. There are actually various scales.
So the IR scale is little m.
The difficulty in imagining the other operator is this m to the 5 scaling, okay? Then that scale would have to depend on the mass of the particle itself.
No, because you just get that out of the ADS radius scale and the redshift.
In other words, if you try and get the inverse scale to be mm-hmm. 1 over little l, which is the scale mm-hmm. m, you're integrating out the light modes that we're dealing with, and you don't want to be doing that. So, you know,
let me see, what would that scale have to be if it were a dimension 8 operator? I guess you can take that.
Well, with the dimension 8 operator, you may want to say that it should be m to the 9 times l to the 8, rather than m to the 5 times l to the 4.
No, but that wasn't the, that this is the answer, and you're trying to say, could I interpret it by a dimension eight out there still? And for that, you would have to have inverse little m's, which means he's integrating out these light.
So sure. You're assuming that the ADS radius on both sides is the same?
Yes.
So that means that you've somehow taken clumps of equal numbers of brains
right.
in your thing, which might seem a little unnatural. I don't know how you imagine this all starting out, but...
Yeah, okay. I can't tell you specifically. I would expect that qualitatively the answer will survive with different ADS radii on different sides. I mean, I won't, you know, go as far as to claim what the precise formula would be, but you know, specifically, you might imagine actually the following setup in order to address that question. So basically, what happens in the tunneling probability, the tunneling probability actually comes from half of the barrier on one side and half on the other. So you might just be able to take, you know, to simply replace the ADS radii in the proper way to get to multiply them together. Okay, so it might be that all you need to do is just take like a geometric mean of the ADS radii. That you know, we thought a little bit about that and that made sense. But we didn't do explicitly calculation to confirm this.
So what do you think this lower dimension operator would be? Do you have a natural candidate?
There might be some sort of higher derivative operators coming from the fact that there is some curvature terms or extrinsic curvature and things like that. But I don't think we have a specific prescription to compute this.
Is this an operator in the gauge theory or in the dual
theory? Not entirely. It has to involve this UV. The point is, if you actually, the way you see how it would emerge is if you actually look consistently at the bulk modes in the ADS throats, in the presence of the UV brain, they pick up extra contributions which are not there in the normal ADS CFT correspondence. In particular, when you look at the bulk solutions, you will see that the boundary conditions force you to keep some Neumann admixtures to the pure Bessels. Normally, the pure Bessels would be the states of the gauge theory that in the dictionary of the usual ADS CFT. Here, there are these extra contributions that come from what we have been calling the newly normalizable modes that just wouldn't be there in the absence of the UV brain. In other words, if you open up into the full ADS boundary.
Well, I guess below some scale, the only states in the theory are the states in this throat, the states in this throat, and the graviton and stuff. So there should be some effective field theory at that scale, which is dual to conformal field theories. And so this should be some bilinear operator in the conformal field theories.
There's some effective field theory. The statement that these conformal field theories is not so clear because, as you were saying, you get a contribution from the Neumann, from what used to be the non-normalized
right.
mode of the field. So it's a wave function which lives closer to the ultraviolet, but it has the same mass.
Exactly.
So this is the issue.
Right.
But there's no, at least it doesn't seem to us like there's any reason you couldn't mix with the states that have their wave functions localized toward the UV end of the throats. And
but they're heavy.
No.
No, they're not. They're light.
They're normalizable modes and non-normalizable modes, which all have the same four-dimensional
depth. All modes, including the very light ones, pick up that extra contribution. Basically, if you look at you know, the solutions of the...
They normally decouple because of the wave function.
You find terms like this, and that are basically needed in there in order to keep your spectrum orthogonal to the zero mode.
Let me just make one other comment. That is, we've looked at these TT couplings when we're going from... looking at corrections from one brain to the same brain, and there is an extra scaling, I haven't worked out the details, which involves basically, I think, this ratio of little m to L to the fourth power, and I think that's the same ratio that you need there, or the same number of powers that you need there. I'm not sure it works out, but it may be that you need to rethink the scaling of the TV.
Actually, let me, since we're discussing the details, let me actually show you some of the details, you know, just where it is. So in particular, actually, the correct setup to solve the bulk equation, let me not spend too much time, but we'll show you, you know, how the details look like. So what you have is, you show the equation of this one. This, by the way, is the boundary condition which Hiroshi was asking about, which comes from the Israel junction conditions. With this coefficient 15 over 4, the correct wave functions are the Bessel functions of index 2. The boundary conditions, however, tell you that the right representation for Bessels you want to use are the Hankel functions, because they correspond to asymptotically pure incoming and outgoing waves.
What's mu tension?
Take it to be one. That's a dimensionless parameter which is useful to keep in order to, if you wish, decouple the zero node in a toy model. If you send mu to...
So mu is one.
Mu is one. Think of mu as one. It's just a dimensionless scale. Now, notice that just corresponds to where you cut the ADS space, where you put the UV brain. Okay? Now, the outgoing wave functions are then therefore going to be these H2 plus vessels. The incoming, the left-sided wave functions are the combination of incoming and reflected. Okay? And now when you look at the transition probability, okay, it's just the ratio of the outgoing current divided by the incoming current. And now that tells you, in fact, you know, you can play with the Bessel function, but the simplest way to think about it is that the current is conserved, it's z-independent, so just evaluate it for a very large z, where you can use pure exponentials and then things are very simple. And then you see that, in fact, the probability is some pretty messy-looking time in Bessel function. However, the key point is when you start, you know, to extract physics, you have to, reasonable physics out of this morass, you have to make some approximations, which is, look at the light states. For the light states, these guys are all evaluated on the UV brain. So their argument is N times L. So for light states, that's a very small number, and you can expand the Bessel functions in series expansions, and then basically compute this as a series in powers of N times L. And now, notice the key reason, okay, that we get this scaling is the presence of these Neumanns in the, as the admixtures in these bulk wave functions.
These are spin 2 in space-time, the thing you're saying?
Yes, there's massive spin 2. And so it's then that they're giving the N5 times L to the 4 scaling. If you went to look at the sub-leading term, then we would get actually the naive answer N to the 9 times L to the 8. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. So this is where it starts. And it's really because of these guys. You know, if they weren't there, then this answer would be M to the 9 times L to the 8. Okay, so let me now go on to another application of this. In particular, let's start discussing the idea for using the tunneling mechanism for supersymmetry breaking. So what's the setup? Then here we are assuming some kind of Calabi-Yau with nearby throats that are separated by some distance. In particular, we are assuming all the scales to be comparable and near gut scale, so that's about 10 to the 14 to 10 to the 15 GeV. Now we imagine that the supersymmetry is broken at some higher scale in the hidden sector, in the adjacent brain, and that we live here, in the adjacent throat, and that we live here. And now the breaking is transmitted via the bulk modes that go around the corner, if you wish, and get to talk to us. And from the effective bulk description, that's this tunneling mechanism. Effectively, because of the tunneling, the supersymmetry breaking split mass splitting scales will get lowered from 10 to the 16 to something like TeV. Okay? So in the Fermi language, what that means is that the states that directly feel the supersymmetry breaking get to couple to us very, very weakly because of the tunneling. It's the tunneling which naturally lowers the coupling constants to us. So in the bulk toy model picture, again we use just this simple setup with warp geometry and two brains that live in the throats and that are connected via the UV brain. And here we want to break both supersymmetry and R-symmetry to provide all the superpartners with masses. And now we also want to preserve some rationale for gauge coupling unification. This is why we want to study the small the small box, okay? So we want to take, let's say, M5 to be about 10 to the 16 GeV, and the ADS radius to be a few times the inverse M5, so that the bulk curvature is not large. So further, we want the logarithms, actually, of these conformal distances to be only of order of few ADS radii, so that we don't have to put in any hierarchies by hand.
So one of a few is a small parameter?
Right.
Yeah,
right, sure. One over few. Correct. That's the small parameter. Let's say 10. It's not that small, but... Now, the hierarchy will therefore emerge because of the tunneling suppression. Okay, there is, simply put, there is not, it's not coming from the ADS scaling. There is not much to gain from scaling because all the scales are relatively nearby. So how do we actually encode the SUSY breaking? So we did an explicit calculation with a model where we had two bulk wild fermions with a Majorana coupling in the left brain where supersymmetry is broken explicitly. So we're putting in this Majorana-like terms in the left brain that you can interpret as boundary conditions in the left throat. And then this can actually be analyzed in finite time by realizing that the conformal symmetry of bulk fermion kinetic terms allows us to go to a conformally flat frame, which is precisely this conformal frame, where the work factor only appears by multiplying the bulk mass term, okay, which essentially corresponds to raising this potential barrier through which the fermions need to tunnel in order to go from one side to the other. And then you can solve actually explicitly these equations in terms of the fermions and so on. Whereas, what does the physics, however, really correspond to? And in particular, how does the transmission of supersymmetry breaking from one side to the other work? Secondly, what we need to do is compute something like, well, let's call it bulk Feynman diagrams of this type. Okay? So if you live on this brain, this is, let's say, our Gaijino in our sector. Here is the brain where supersymmetry is broken. It's communicated by this bulk fermion that basically needs to jump from here to the other side to pick up this supersymmetry breaking term and then bring it back. In order to close the loop, however, I should point out we needed to put in a heavy adjoint, okay? Because we wanted to prevent any leakage of gauge charges from our brain into the bulk, in order to maintain the rationale for gauge coupling unification. And we wanted to make it heavy so that it does not significantly correct the beta functions. Now, the calculation can be done in the effective 4D theory by basically doing the Fourier transform of the bulk diagram, and since it's complicated, this also allows for some approximations to be made. Mainly, the idea is to effectively derive an effective 4D theory description of these bulk KK states by dimensionally reducing everything to 4D and computing explicit couplings of the modes to the both the SUSY breaking and the visible brains, and then look at the diagrams involving the KK states in the loops, sum over the KK states, and do the momentum integrals afterwards. Okay, and this, in fact, in flat box has been studied by Mirabelli and Pesky. Now, the KK spectrum naturally splits into the states that live on the left and the well, okay, left and right. Okay, the left guys are the ones that see the supersymmetry breaking directly. Their couplings to the SUSY breaking brain are strong, and that induces the SUSY breaking splittings that are afforded of the left cutoff. The right guys need to tunnel through the barrier to see that supersymmetry is broken. Therefore, their couplings to the SUSY breaking brain are small. As a result of that smallness, the SUSY breaking mass splittings for them are much smaller. They're suppressed by n times ADS radius to the power 4 nu. Furthermore, the left guys, now the left guys on the other hand that have SUSY, that see strongly broken SUSY coupled to the visible sector brain weakly because of the tunneling suppression. On the other hand, the right guys actually couple with couplings order 1. So the diagrams basically that need to be looked at are of this form, okay, so you have to sum up over the states, put in the proper mass insertions. The summation can be done by proper contour integration in some complex plane. And so as a result, one actually finds the answer, which is a somewhat complicated looking formula, but it does manifestly bear the signature, the mark of the tunneling suppression, in the form of this overall factor, which is the ratio of the right cutoff, right brain cutoff, to the ADS radius to the power 4 nu. Okay? And it's this 4 nu and this ratio which then gets translated into the generation of small SUSY breaking mass splittings in the visible sector. So the example that we looked at, and I should then say also that the squirks get masses from radiative collections involving the genome in the loops that will end up being of the same order of magnitude, like in these no-scale models. The numerical examples that are illustrative, now to, let's say, take N5 to be about 10 to the 16 Jev, ADS radius to be, let's say, a fifth of that. The cutoff on the right side is basically only about 5 times ADS radius. Now, with relatively little tunneling suppression, the power in particular with this parameter mu equal to 1, in order to get the Gugino mass of order TeV, we need to take this scale to be about 10 to the 10 Jev, which is not, you know, that great by itself. It's comparable to some of the other models. That's the typical scale that people are familiar with from looking at other methods for supersymmetry breaking. However, with more tunneling suppression, it's quite clear that actually the increase in the supersymmetry breaking scale can be significant. Okay? And it can go up to about 3 times 10 to the 13 Jev. In fact, the upper limit would be about 5 times 10 to the 13 Jev in order to not lose to gravity mediation.
Question?
Yes.
So you need a large number of brains in order to get this throat, but you're also imagining that we only have a standard model gauge group all the way up to these large scales, rather than a gauge group of rank N?
Right.
A large number, so how does that work? Do you have to introduce some other scale where you break all those other, where you give masses to those, all those other gauge groups?
I think that you're basically saying that all of those basically get broken at this scale, right? L1. Which is the cutoff on the right IR brain.
Our stack of brains has some structure.
It has some structure, exactly.
That's smaller than the separation between the other stack.
Right, that's right. So that happens by the scaling, that happens before we hit, you know, the actual 10 to the 16 Jev. Right.
In other words, that's a confinement scale to that gauge.
Right, exactly.
The confinement scale is very high.
Exactly. Okay, so let's, you know, in order to...
So in order to do that, you have... So is this
additional gauge symmetry unified also with
the observable gauge symmetry? In order to make confinement scale realize, those coupling has to be.
All these scales are of the same order.
Right. They are of the same order, so presumably, phenomenologically, that's not inconsistent with the existing pictures.
There might be some threshold.
There may be some threshold corrections that, you know, eventually, these, the, due to the presence of the extra particles at a heavy scale, at some high scale, okay, you know, the running may be affected.
Are you assuming that, so I just want to make it clear, so I'll make it understand it. So there is this, the standard model gauge group, and then there is this huge rank, you know, the gauge group symmetry is very large rank, which is just very high confinement.
Well, it's not that big. L is 5. L is 5 times M5.
Right.
So why are you calling it a huge rank? G squared N is sort of...
Well, there's
additional
gauge symmetry, which has very high confinement scale.
Dot scale.
Dot scale, yeah.
Near
dot scale.
Or hopefully a little higher. The point is it better be a little higher,
yeah.
Depending
on... Right.
I see.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Now we can also compute the gravitino mass. Basically, gravitino mass, again, you know, what we have is we look at the bulk gravitino and then do the KK reduction for that. It will split up, the spectrum will split into the zero mode, which in the absence of Suzy breaking will have a very profile parallel in that of the zero mode graviton. And then there will be two towers with different gaps that are parameterized by the inverse distances to different UV, different IR brains. And in order to see all we need to do is basically just compute these masses that emerge for the zero mode due to the supersymmetry breaking. And in fact, that involves the bulk fermions that explicitly see Suzy broken by the boundary condition running in the loop of the gravitino. And the calculation gives something like this, which is actually resemblant of the formulas which one gets in the models with hidden sector Gugino condensation, where you get something like 2 powers of M4 suppressions. And now the numerics works like as follows. In fact, for the case of relatively little tunneling suppression, we actually get a micron gauge gravitino. But for the more interesting case of mu equals to 3, we get actually gravitino mass close to TeV, and so actually this guy could be a dark matter candidate. Now, the other thing that is important to compare with is the other mediation mechanisms. In this case, because we are confining gauge charges only to our gauge group, only to the right IR brain, gauge mediation to the lowest order is inoperative. So as a result, we need to compare with gravity and anomaly mediation. The gaugino mass contributions from these two mechanisms are effectively bounded by the gravitino mass. And so as long as this is less than the tunneling mediation, the tunneling mediation would be dominant. And in fact, there is a condition, if you compare these formulas, what we need to do is take the bulk a little bit asymmetric, in fact, push the left IR sector a little bit farther down the torque, but not necessarily by much. The reason is basically that it's this M4 here that helps. Okay. And let me now go on to discuss perhaps the somewhat wilder and more speculative, but fun application, which is potential astrophysical consequences of the tunneling mediation. And in particular, let me motivate this by first reminding people about the existing paradigm about the structure formation in the early universe, which is the statement that the so-called lambda cold dark matter model, so cosmological constant plus cold dark matter, actually is a very successful scenario for structure formation in the universe. Now, what that means is you assume that the universe is dominated by something like cosmological constant and cold dark matter, non-interacting dark matter, and then you take some initial perturbations in the universe, and then you evolve it using gravitational perturbation theory, and then you find that the prediction for the ensuing structure matches the observations very closely, except that recently there has been some debate about whether such models predict or do not predict too much structure at short scales. By that I mean about kiloparsec. Particularly there was the issue about these cuspy centers of galaxies and dwarf halo abundance. So there is basically something which is like a standard lore of the dark matter or of the structure formation, which shows simulations in particular of using these models as inputs show that the galaxy centers tend to be very singular, very cuspy, with the energy density gradient as 1/r. And so the some observations suggested that this may not be the case. Furthermore, some observations also suggested that there should be fewer halos, dwarf halos in the big halo of the galaxy than the cold dark matter models would predict. Now, it's not clear that this will survive because these observations change, and there are people who are claiming that the new data are already ruling this out, but I think the debate is still going on. Now, as a result, people have postulated a number of different models that were designed in order to address this issue and to somehow reduce the power deposited at the short scales. There was this self-interacting dark matter of Spergel and Steinhardt and the annihilating cold dark matter model, fuzzy cold dark matter, fluid cold dark matter, decaying cold dark matter. Actually, this one is relevant for us because phenomenologically speaking, the work done in this paper by Sen, C-E-N, has done the simulations assuming the existence of some decay channel for a dark matter particle that are perhaps relevant for the design that we wanted to propose. So our approach is to actually imagine that we have a small and heavy, a weakly interacting particle, which is however metastable, but long-lived. So what do? We now imagine that we have the double throw geometry where one of the throats actually lives at a PEV, okay? So we're putting in out this hierarchy by hand, okay? The other throat may be arbitrary. Let's say could be speculated that it could be an exact CFT that goes all the way in the IR. Now, what's the point? The point is basically the following. If we have a weakly interacting particle with a mass PEV, then we can have a model which is containing the normal cold dark matter for most of the history of the universe, therefore giving the correct background in which the large-scale structure evolves. But because it's unstable, it can decay at the right time to soften the centers of galaxies. It's like a scoop with which you can take out a little bit of energy density from the cores and remove it just when you need it. Why TEV? Actually, it's getting the abundance right in a natural way that will force us to take a TEV scale particle. So the way to do that is basically to compare the energy density of the Rayleigh particle to the critical density of the universe needed to close the universe today. So the way to do it, the simplest way to do it is basically take the number of baryons to photons, then divide it by 1,000 in order to take into account the fact that today we are matter dominated, put in the proper formulas, and then actually realize that they give you something like, the scale that they give you is something like M Planck times the current temperature of the universe, 2.7 kelvins, which is about millimeter. And so, of course, this is just the statement that in doing product is PV scale, which is the geometric mean between the millimeter and the Planck scale. And here, this is the annihilation cross-section of the dark matter particle, which what we need to do is actually postulate a specific kind of dark matter particle in order to prevent it from decaying too much into us. Okay, because we are imagining the model where we are living here, and if the dark matter particle had couplings that are too strong, okay, it would just decay into us, so it wouldn't be dark. And that means we have to impose something that we have been referring to as the bulk parity, which is to exclude the cubic couplings of the bulky to the standard model degrees of freedom. With this calculation, then we can actually check explicitly the expression for the annihilation cross-section. It picks up a formula like this, where this is the number of flavors in the standard model. And then it turns out that, in fact, for the fundamental scales giving a product of order 10, the mass that's needed to saturate this to unity is about a TeV scale particle. Okay. And now, the interesting thing is that requiring that this TeV scale particle is roughly as long-lived as the universe itself, using the formula n to the fifth times L to the fourth, tells us that the ADS radius has to be close to the unification scale, which is an interesting coincidence with the unification number physics. And also gives M5 using this to be about 10 to the 16 Jev. Now, what are the constraints on this? Well, as I said, there is this constraint about making sure that it's dark matter, which is this one, that the standard model decay of the bulk into the standard model must be prevented by some bulk parity.
You could have put the standard model somewhere else.
We could have also put, this is of course the requirement in the simplest picture where we are imagining living in on the brain to which the dark matter is close. There are possibly other variations on that theme, particularly by placing the standard model elsewhere, as Ivo points out. Then of course there is an issue about whether the big glue balls that live on the other side of the UV brain could give you appreciable correction to the Newton's law, because if they're very, very light, then they could be excited. But in fact, this is not the case because of tunneling suppression. They have small couplings to us. Their very functional overlaps with us are small. Now, there is also the astrophysical issue, which is basically that due to the decay of these particles and the removal of the mass from the cores of galaxies actually grow in size. This is just the usual angular momentum conservation, okay, the ice scatter problem. If you imagine having some luminous object in orbit that consisting mostly of normal baryons, and it's bound by the particles inside of the core, then the decay, the removal of mass from here will cause this object to move out or to some larger distance, because it's going to be bound less by gravity. And so that actually tells us that the mass times the mass of the core times its radius has to be roughly constant. Now, because we know that mass is exponentially going down, where the formula involves the lifetime of the particle, that means that this particle has to be sufficiently long-lived in order not to prevent, in order not to lead to excessive blow-up of the galaxy, obviously. But roughly, the Hubble time is not inconsistent. There is also the issue of what happens if we decay into pure CFT. Okay, in that case, you could imagine that CFT particles that come out of the decay would actually fly out of the galaxy completely, and that there would be nothing that can trap them in there because they're relativistic. Okay, so there may be, however, if we actually cut off the other side and the IR, effectively putting something like a mass gap, then there may be some interesting possibilities to trap some of that. Some of those products of those decays inside of the galaxy and actually keep the mass of the galaxy constant. And this is something that we're actually thinking about now. So since I have gone quite a bit over time without asking,
let me finally conclude by saying that we believe we have a new mechanism for reducing small numbers, which is actually generic for separated stacks of brains in full bulk. Doesn't seem to require any large hierarchies as inputs, and is in the calculable regime of string theory. It may have interesting applications such as supersymmetry breaking in dark matter. And of course, it would be very interesting to see if it can be used for some more precise top-down model building. Thank you.
Questions?
So this one, the supersymmetry is still broken at TD.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
As a result of the, right. Right. So exactly, of the mediation. So the way we would see it, we would see supersymmetry broken at TV scale, and one experimental prediction would be to start seeing extra particles at the TV scale, in particular the superpartners, the squarks and the gauginos.
Supersymmetry broken everywhere at TV scale?
No, not in the hidden sector. In the hidden sector, it's broken at 10 to the 14th level.
Yeah.
Right, so there is more structure, basically, beyond the TV scale.
So but you're sure that the only way that we feel is through this effect? There's no other.
Yes, we think that this is the only way. Given the setup that we have discussed, we have compared with, there is no possibility of direct gauge mediation because all of the gauge charges of the standard model are confined to the brain. The other possibilities that are known are the gravity mediation and the anomaly mediation. And in this range of parameters, this mechanism seems to be dominant.
So for example, supersymmetry breaking in the other brain would not modify the picture that you have this almost symmetric asymptotically ADS region on both sides?
Okay, I think the fair statement is that with the range of parameters we are choosing, it wouldn't modify it significantly. And besides, even if it modifies it, if it changes the ADS region by some amount, we are still going to have some sort of warped bulk geometry, which still will give you the same kind of qualitatively similar barriers and qualitatively similar effects. Even though
so
some...
So you're assuming supersymmetry is broken while preserving conformal invariance?
No, not necessarily. We're just using this as a very simplistic toy model.
Yes.
The point is that many of the formulas we believe would survive even if you don't have exact conformal invariance and therefore not exact ADS
drop. Well, but if the supersymmetry breaks the conformal invariance, then the bulk geometry in the throat region could be significantly more.
Of course, but any bulk geometry, any power law warping will actually produce very similar potentials and therefore very similar effects. See, one of the advantages of the calculation that we were doing is that it was all in this conformal frame, where all we needed to do is just say that the warp factor as a function of the conformal distance between brains is some power or the exponential. Okay. As a result, the potentials that you get inevitably are the form 1 over z square. Those potentials generically lead to these effects. And so the only thing that will change is, in the end of the day, apart from some numerical coefficient, so for example, where we had 4 nu, it may not be 4 nu, but it may be some other parameter. The nu would be related in a different way to the bulk Lagrangian scales, okay? And also there will be a different relationship in general between the proper distance between the brains and the conformal distance. But as far as we can tell, that most of the formulas that we are giving in terms of the conformal quantities would be qualitatively unchanged.
If the supersymmetry is broken on this brain, it probably gets a large cosmological constant. How do you know it stays there and it doesn't move around?
I surrender. Indeed.
Lisa Randall was describing a model of locally localized gravity at David Fast, and they also use this mechanism of exponential decrease, and they explained, you know, they used it for graviton to be metastable with a very long lifetime, right? So if you compare
right.
their model with your model, you have always stable graviton.
That's correct.
Okay. And is there any...
So for this setup, the way that we have realized and studied it so far, we have 4D gravity all the way. So, you know, there is really, we're imagining that this bulk geometry is stabilized, resolved, consistently in some string theory sense, and then we just have a world that has a normal 4D picture with some, you know, hidden sector involving more complex structure of this type, and 4D gravity that's valid at all distances.
Okay. Okay. And one more question, is there any limit of parameters that can give you Randall syndrome model or the field model? You know, where the tunneling barrier becomes small?
Well, you know, yes, you can imagine something like that if you take one of the brains to be exactly coincident with the UV-brain.
Then what's the point?
Exactly. But then in that case, you actually do not generate interest in physics because you're beginning to rapidly lose tunneling. For tunneling, it's important that you are separated so that you have some barrier in between.
Other questions? Thank you.